Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You're tuned in to Columbo Chronicles at Blog Talk Radio. Follow the mover and shaker, award-winning author and host, seen on TV and radio, Rose Columbo. Every Wednesday, Rose interviews prominent experts and authors on politics and social justice. Call in and listen or ask the guests a question at 646-564-9742. Now, here's Rose.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Columbo. And we are here for you every Wednesday from noon to 1:30, our new time, noon to 1 o'clock p.m. here on the West Coast in the good old USA. And that is our new time, so jot it down. And we're working on a new intro to let you know that that is our new time coming soon. So welcome from around the world. Blog Talk Radio podcast is worldwide, and we do welcome everyone from around the world. So glad to see your countries pop up on our stats, and hope you are having a wonderful day anywhere you are around the world. And today we have a very special show for you. As always, we have wonderful guests every Wednesday on authors and experts, the world of authors and experts, just for you and for me. We become enlightened, empowered, encouraged, reinvent ourselves and do something that we've always dreamed of doing and never did, by people who are authors and experts and are willing to share their stories on how they became actors and actors turned authors, and maybe even politicians, whatever your dream may be. These guests are here for you to encourage you to reach your goals and your dreams every Wednesday. And today's very special guest is Rick Lentz. That's L-E-N-Z. Rick Lentz, and he was educated at the University of Michigan and New York University, and Rick Lentz directed the Jackson Civic Theater for 2 years before going to New York to seek an acting career. He also wrote a fantastic novel, The Alexandrite. So he's going to share his story of how he became an actor turned author, and how he ended up on Broadway and on the silver screen with major actors and actresses, and how he ended up writing fantastic novels such as The Alexandrite. So he'll tell us a little bit about all of that, and hopefully you will be encouraged if you are seeking to be an actor or an author, or both. In the meantime, so much is going on in our world. We will be entering into the world of authors and experts in just a little bit. But in the meantime, there's so many issues going on around the world and in the good old USA. And what happens in the good old USA affects the rest of the world, as we all know. So everyone keeps their eye on the USA. And one of the articles I came across today that caught my eye, because we know there's so many homeless people today and the population is older in the USA, and many are living on Social Security and their savings, and others are living on HUD, dependent on HUD, because maybe they're mentally, physically challenged, disabled, elderly, or lost their jobs, went through bad divorce. There's so many reasons why we can be sideswiped in life. So we can't judge people. Not everyone's a lazy person because they apply for HUD or health care or entitlement programs. although it is abused, and we need to cut out the fraud, of course, so that the people that really need it can get the help they need. So this particular article came from the Washington Post, and it says HUD Secretary Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, is about to propose tripling rent for some low-income Americans receiving federal housing subsidies. Well, I don't know if I'm for this at this moment in time. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson on Wednesday will propose tripling the amount the poorest households are expected to pay for rent, as well as encourage those receiving housing subsidies to go to work. Well, if you're 90 years old, you're not going to be able to go to work. If you're in a wheelchair, you can't go to work. If you're disabled and mentally challenged, you can't probably get a job that's going to pay a tripled amount of money for housing under the HUD program. And there are so many reasons, if you have children, whatever, that they are on HUD because they don't have the money to pay the high cost of rent, especially in the big cities like California and New York and so forth. California is outrageous in rent and the cost of housing, and it has just skyrocketed as the governor, the Democratic governor, Jerry Brown, and his regime continue to flood our nation with illegals, unidentified people, forcing Californians to pick up the tab for their health care, for their HUD, for their food stamps, for their necessities of life, for their health care, and so forth. And it is making the middle class poor. So it's also creating dangerous sanctuary cities of unidentified persons from foreign nations without inspection, which is required by the law, because Governor Jerry Brown and his regime refused to allow ICE and Border Patrol and sheriffs to inspect the unidentified persons residing in those tent cities along California's coast. So there is a real problem here for legal, lawful Americans who paid taxes all their lives and now are down and out on their luck, or just elderly and can't afford a tripled rent. The move to overhaul how low-income rental subsidies are calculated would affect more than 4.5 million families relying on federal housing assistance. The proposed legislation would require congressional approval. Well, we have to really take a look at this, and we have to think about this seriously and contact our representatives and consider 4.5 million people who are dependent on HUD housing and can't afford triple rent. Tenants generally pay 30% of their adjusted income toward rent for a public housing agency minimum rent, which is capped at $50 a month for the poorest families. Believe it or not, we have poor American families in America, and they're flooding our nation with more poor foreigners that we can't afford to support. We can't even pay for our own persons, our own legal, lawful Americans, natural-born citizens, and give them a hand up as this government is flooding our nation with unidentified foreigners who are draining our entitlement programs that were intended for our American citizens who paid taxes all their lives and then the elderly and unable to afford the excessive high rents that we are seeing today. What happened to compassion? just because somebody is a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer chief and makes good money and can afford those high rents, what about the rest of the American people who can't? So the administration's legislative proposal sets the family monthly rent contribution at 35% of gross income or 35% of their earnings, working 15 hours a week at the federal minimum wage. Under the proposal, the cap for the poorest families would rise approximately $150 a month, three times higher than the current minimum. That is a lot of money. People say, oh, that's not a lot of money. When you're poor, it is a lot of money. When you're 80 and 90 years old and can't afford $150 more, and you have no way to earn $150 more for rent, it is a serious problem that could create more homeless Americans across this nation. So I'm very disturbed by this particular proposal. I'm very disappointed in Dr. Carson right now, as you can tell, obviously. But I will do more research on it, and I will get back to you. And, in fact, I will contact Dr. Carson and his office and try to get more information on this proposal. So you might want to contact his office and give him your point of view. You may also want to contact your congressman. That number just happens to be, if you have a pencil, 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. And let them know what your thoughts are about tripling the HUD housing payments for the elderly, the mentally and physically handicapped, the veterans, the true Americans who probably spent most of their life paying taxes. So we'll get back to that issue next Wednesday. But now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, which you always look forward to, because we always have dynamic guests, and today we do have a very dynamic guest. His name is Rick Lenz, L-E-N-Z, and he was educated at the University of Michigan and New York University. And Rick Lenz directed the Jackson Civic Theater for 2 years before going to New York to seek an acting career. In 1965, at the age of 25, he made his Broadway debut in Mating Dance, starring Van Johnson. Mating Dance closed on opening night, but it was also Rick Lenz's big break because stage producer David Merrick was in the audience and cast him in his Broadway hit. Boy, was that a stroke of luck. In the right place at the right time. And he was cast in the Broadway hit Cactus Flower as an understudy to the juvenile lead Iger Sullivan. He later took over the role, and producer Mike Frankovich and the wonderful, I just loved, Walter Matthau, as most people did, saw him in that role, and they cast him in the movie version of Cactus Flower in 1969, in which he co-starred opposite the wonderful and funny and beautiful Goldie Hawn, as well as Walter Matthau and the beautiful Ingrid Bergman, everybody loves. And he also went from actor and turned author, and wrote a wonderful novel entitled The Alexandrite, and he is going to tell us all about that and his acting career. So don't touch that dial, because we'll be back with the world of authors and experts in just a moment right here on Columbo Chronicles Live, just for you.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Columbo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to columbochronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Columbo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, columbochronicles.com.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car... Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Hi, we're back on Columbo Chronicles Live, and we're here for you, and we're about to enter into the world of authors and experts, but I'm having difficulty trying to connect with my guest. Let's see if he can hear me. Hello, Rick Lentz, are you there? Hello? For some reason, we're having a disconnect. So maybe he can call back in a minute, and we'll see if we can get him here on the show. Hello, Rick Lentz?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Well, I'm glad we connected.
I've been talking on this phone all morning. It works fine. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I saw you were there, but then I couldn't hear anything. So I was like, okay.
I knew we could connect one way or another.
Oh,
you entered the line, too.
Well, welcome. Hello? Hello? Uh-oh, we lost him again. That is so strange. I don't know why we lost him. Well, let's see if he can call back in. Let's say hello to Erwin Zucker of the Southern California Book Publicist. Hi, Erwin. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm listening, and I don't know why there's a problem with Rick Lentz. I spoke to him last night. You have his number, 818-780-1509.
Yeah, we were just talking, and then the phone dropped. So hopefully he'll call back in. So we're having a little disconnect here. But I know that you, Erwin Zucker, held a booth at the Book Publicist, for the Book Publicist of Southern California, as representing
yes.
the authors from your group. So how did the Los Angeles book affair go on last Saturday?
It was we had a tremendous event on the campus at USC this past weekend with the booth of the Book Publicists of Southern California. We had about 20 authors who showed up and displayed and sold their books at our booth. And this was the 23rd year in a row that the LA Times has sponsored this wonderful event. They're going to do it again next year. It started originally 23 years ago on the campus at UCLA. And then after about 10 years or so, they switched to USC. For some reason, I don't know why, but that's where it is right now on the campus at USC. And over the weekend, they claim over 150,000 book lovers showed up we didn't get all 150,000. We got several hundred that came to our booth and talked to our authors. So that was pretty interesting, yeah. And we were hoping that Rick Lenz and his wife would be there, but he had a minor health problem over the weekend, and that took care of it. What if I call Rick Lenz right now and see how things are going at his end?
That would be fantastic. And in the meantime, I will let our guests know a little more about what's going on in the world of politics until we can connect back with Rick Lentz. These things happen and the show must go on. So I'll just wait and watch for him to enter the studio in just a minute.
I'll call him right now, and he should. You say he made a connection. You spoke briefly, but you couldn't hear him, right?
Well, it says that, somehow we got disconnected. So he can call back in and we can connect
I'm sure he'll call right back in because he wants to do the show. He prepared information and everything, and you have it. Okay, I'm listening. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. And things happen when you're on the radio, so sometimes there's technical problems in the connections. So we'll try to hook up with Rick Lentz, and we'll enter into the world of authors and experts. But as I was saying before, I think it's important to understand that HUD is a program for Americans, illegal Americans who are down and out on their luck and who are elderly or veterans, people who paid into taxes all of their life generally, and then they find themselves with an increased cost of living and unable to work for whatever reason. And so we need to be very compassionate and concerned when the government decides they're going to propose that suddenly these people are going to have their rent tripled. I mean, I can understand, you know, maybe $25 a month increase in rent, but tripled? I mean, who on earth could afford to have their rent tripled? Anyone. I mean, on any economic level that's between poor, middle class, and upper middle class, almost no one. So it's a big concern to most of us. So let's be compassionate to all those people who are less fortunate. And on that note, I think we might be able to enter back into the world of authors and experts. Let's see if we can hook
here.
Up here with our... Hi, Rick.
Oh, hi, Rose. God, I feel just awful. No, I'm okay.
Oh, no.
I'm on this line now.
It's fine, you know. Things happen in the, you know, on the radio and disconnects.
I know, but if you've got an actor's long-time fragile ego and you screw up, then you figure, well, it's all my fault.
No, it's not your fault. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
Makes a little more excitement on the show.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're on your way to the curtain has just gone up and you just realized you didn't put on your pants. And you got to run back to your dressing room and fix things right. So anyway, I'm here.
So welcome to Columbo Chronicles. And
thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I read a little bit of your background to our audience and informed them about some of your experiences. So why don't we get started? Because I love Walter Matthau, and I just thought he was the funniest.
Too.
And I actually saw him in person once when I was in my 20s at Universal Studios, and he was riding around in a limo and going to his dressing room, and he was waving at us, and I was so excited. I still remember it was like yesterday.
Do you remember what movie he was doing?
Oh, gosh.
Do you remember what movie he was doing at the time? Okay.
I don't remember, but But he was very, I mean, it was nice of him to be so friendly, you know, and he was, you could tell he was a nice person, you know.
Oh,
and I
yeah,
just thought
sure.
he was the funniest ever. So,
me too.
How, Rick Lenz, how did you become an actor?
Well, I didn't get to work with Walter right off the top. I was in, you know, when I was in school, I my whole desire was to be a football player, but I was more than averagely breakable, so I quit on that real fast, and I found that I could do just as well, you know, getting girls' attention, which was all I was interested in anyway. By being, you know, on in little plays or whatever was available there. And then I got into a summer stock theater, and I had been in pre-med because my father was a doctor, and he wanted me to be a doctor too. And I watched him do a procedure one time, and it was, there was blood and stuff, and I was leaning up against the wall, and I just felt my eyes roll back. And I just slipped down the wall and was a puddle on the floor. And my dad said, "This happens all the time to young." And I said, "No, I don't think so." And I could tell by the look in his eye that he understood. So anyway, I got into summer stock and into the theater program at where I went to school in Michigan, and then I went to New York and. You know, and you just did all those things that you have to do in New York to stay alive. Like, you know, I was a night clerk and I was a substitute teacher and I did, you know, I was a file clerk. I mean, anything there was to do, I did it. But and I'm rambling, but I went. I remember working at the Americana as a night clerk. And I was well, right around that time, I was on 7th Avenue one day, and JFK was in his motorcade coming down, going toward the bottom. And I just saw him, and he looked kind of, I think it was the last year of his life. And I just saw him kind of looking sort of distracted. And I also saw the Beatles running out of the Ed Sullivan Theater because I was working right across the street, and we were all kind of at our, yeah, that was fascinating.
That must have been exciting.
And, yeah,
wasn't
it was.
That
well,
their first,
you know, you,
I think that was their
it,
first
it was.
Appearance in America. Yeah, on the
Ed
Sullivan
Show. It was,
yeah.
It was cool. And the other cool thing was that I one time went to see Richard Burton's Hamlet, because I just, you know, wanted to see what he did with it. And it was still when he and Elizabeth Taylor were the hottest love story since, I guess, Wallace Simpson and Edward or whoever. And she happened to be, I happened to get a box seat. I don't know why, but I was able to get a box seat that night. And I was right above about the fifth row in the audience. And there was Liz Taylor in the center of the audience. And I think Burton pretty much played Hamlet for her that night. And it was an experience I'll never forget, because you could see Richard Burton, you know, just doing Hamlet for his girlfriend or whatever she qualified as at the time.
Oh, did she look just as gorgeous off the screen?
Oh my goodness!
She...
Oh yeah. Well, she was, you know, she was in the audience. She was sitting in the very center of the audience watching. You know, she looked like she was. In love, you know, or something, you know, she's just because I watched her about as much as I watched Burton during that performance, and it was fascinating.
Oh, and, yeah, she was such a beautiful woman. Oh, gorgeous.
Oh, I know.
And
yeah, I worked with her
as a child,
later,
she
you know.
Was beautiful.
I know she was. Oh, I know. She was never not going to be pretty.
No, never. So you got to work with her, with Elizabeth
Taylor?
Yeah,
I did later on. Well, not. I didn't have any scenes with her, but we talked a little bit because I'd known a couple of her friends. And that was called Malice in Wonderland. That was a television movie she did with Jane Alexander. And I shared a dressing room with Peter Lawford, and I went home went home after one weekend, and Peter said, "Good night, Rick." And I said good night. And when I got back there Monday, he wasn't there because he died over the weekend, which was a shocker.
Yes. He was a very handsome man, too.
He
very
was,
handsome.
Yeah.
I always think of him in Little Women.
Oh, yeah.
The movie,
oh,
Little
sure.
Women.
Oh.
Yeah,
I remember it well.
I have that DVD.
Do you? I have a collection of quite a few, too. Yeah.
There's just nothing like the classic movies. I mean, these actors and actresses had charisma. They had their own look. You couldn't forget them.
I know.
They had their own style.
I know.
And there's just no way. I mean, even my daughters, I mean, they're just like, "Mom, who's that? Oh, my God. How come the men don't look like that anymore? How come the women don't dress like
I
that
know.
Anymore? I'm like,
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
They're unforgettable faces, you know?
Oh, yeah, people like William Holden. I mean, there was a guy. Yeah.
And, I know. I mean, I have so many classic movies. It's crazy. People go, "My God." I don't know. It just makes me feel like part of the real America, having all of these classic movies.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've collected the same kind of, you know, thing, and I just I watch one of John Wayne's films, The Searchers, which I love, and I have a copy of and see from time to time.
Speaking of John Wayne, did you meet John Wayne? And also, I have a note here that says that you can tell us a little story about how John Wayne sent you to the hospital.
Yeah, well, I played in his last film, The Shootist. I was the nefarious newspaper man who wanted to come and get his story, you know, with no concern for his, you know, his humanity much at all. I was kind of a heavy. Anyway, toward the end of our scene, in which I suggested that we write about him in my newspaper before he dies, because he's ailing in that film. And so he doesn't take kindly to that. So at the end of the scene, Lauren Bacall, who I worked with in New York and on Broadway in Cactus Flower, and so she comes in toward the end of the film. But anyway, around that part of the scene, John Wayne, one shot. I'm just waxing on about how wonderful the story is going to be about this gunman, this killer, this whatever, and then in the next angle, his huge old I forget what kind of a handgun it was, but it was in my mouth, and so he kind of backs me out the door, and then out to the front, and on the front porch, He turns me around and he knocks me down with his forearm, but the pistol is still in the forearm, and when he did it, he took a little gash in the back of my head. So I did indeed have to go to the hospital that day, and they just took a couple of stitches. It was no big deal, but I remember seeing him a couple weeks later. We were going to do another sequence together, and he said to me, "Well, I only ever did that once before." And,
I was working at for a medical director at the time, and that he got very, very ill. And unfortunately, right. I wasn't there the day that he came in to see that particular doctor. My boss and the lady who was at sitting in for me that day, she said, she said to him, "Oh my gosh, Mr. Wayne, you look great, you look wonderful." And he said, I wish I felt as great as I look. And
So I
always remember that, you know. And so I missed meeting him by a day.
Oh,
yeah.
He was a nice man. I really liked him.
Yeah, he lived in Newport Beach, and and I talked to his daughter once on the phone after she became a lawyer about a situation, and she was very, very nice too.
He was an utter gentleman.
He was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And all the crew people, you know, respected him enormously, and I think the reason was that he didn't have any kind of star sort of attitude about him, and you always like that because that's just the way it's supposed to be. They're just, you know, people doing their jobs, and if they happen to be people who get a lot of attention, that's all, you know, that's all fine. But you're still, a regular human doing your job with a bunch of other people, and there's only one way to deal with that. And I remember in my life, you know, mostly people I ran into were that way. You know, those big old, you know, big old stars that you were talking about. Like, I was looking at a list of people that I, but like Lauren Bacall was, she was a little prickly actually, but I did the same kind of dance scene when I did the movie, and that time it was Ingrid Bergman and not Ms. Bacall, and Ingrid Bergman was she was just generous and kind and friendly, and we had a couple things in common. So I talked to her a lot. One of the things I talked to her about was Angela Lansbury, who'd done her first, I think, from Murder, She Wrote, and she'd done her first role. I think it was her first role in this country. Because she was from England, I'm pretty sure, and so she did The Maid, I think, was it Gaslight or Angel Street, one of those. I think it was the one with Charles Boyer where she tries to drive her crazy. And if you haven't seen
movie.
That one, that's a great film. Oh, yeah, you have.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a great movie. And so you also mentioned that actors generally, I would say most, have to take on different types of jobs, and probably a lot of young people don't realize that. You know, you don't go to Hollywood, get discovered, and you're famous. That's rare.
No, it doesn't work that way.
And so you also said that that you read Huckleberry Finn. Ghetto grade school schoolers. How did that happen, and what was that like?
Well, I did some substitute teaching among all the other jobs I did to stay alive, because I had a family by the time I was 23. I had two boys, and so I had to work while I did all this, and so one of the jobs was substitute teaching, and I would teach anything. I remember teaching a Latin class one time and going in, and one of the kids had written about the substitute, which was me, persona non grata, which I tried not to take too unkindly, because, you know, it was just kids. But anyway, so I read, I went into a school. It was in the ghetto, and it was mostly black kids, and I was this, you know, young white kid, would-be actor who was substitute teacher for the time being, and I had to pick up with what the teacher was doing at the time, and he was reading to them from Huckleberry Finn, and I picked up just exactly where I was, you know, meant to take up the story from where the other guy had left off. And it was, you know, it was stuff like, you know, N-word Jim, and I had to say all that stuff to be true to Mark Twain and to get it right. And I remember the kind of a revelation sort of feeling was that the kids could see my discomfort, and there was no unkindness. I mean, they're, you know, kids are kids, and there's little rowdiness here and there, but as I was, you know, kind of stumbling through as best I could, you know, reading that whatever section of Huckleberry Finn I was meant to be reading, they were really kind of nice to me, and it was just a, it's a nice memory for me, and I wrote about that and a lot of things like that in my memoir called North of Hollywood, and it's just I had a lot of nice experiences like that with people who you just kind of have these sort of stereotypes sometimes about the way people are, and you know, more often than not, you're wrong if you're going into it with stereotype. Yeah.
I think most people do, and then they find out people are just people.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Oh, God.
And yeah. So you also were a night clerk, and also knew about a night clerk who met a sad ending. So what happened?
Well, I was working at the Americana Hotel, but earlier I lived in a really kind of a funky walk-up hotel in Manhattan, and it was on the upper west side, and it was kind of a dicey area, and I remember riding up and down in the elevator with a guy who was working there, I think, and then I would always talk to the night clerk and his wife, and I found out, maybe within a year later, that night clerk and his wife had met their ends by hatchet from that worker who'd been going up and down. I'd run into that guy 10 times, and it was looking back, it's a little bit, I can't help but, laugh a little bit, but it certainly isn't funny. I remember when I was in New York and I...
unexpected, we'll say.
I know. Oh, I was just shocked because I said, these are people I know. They're, they're my friends. And anyway, when I was in New York, all those times they tell you, don't go out. I went out at night in New York all the time and all over the place. As a young actor, you end up all kinds of places that, all kinds of hours. I never got mugged or anything like that. The only time that ever happened to me was out in L.A. or was at the Pasadena Playhouse.
L.A., it makes sense.
I know. Yeah. But it was outside the Pasadena Playhouse. It was a nice area, but my wife and I had gone down to see a friend of mine who had been in the show, and we were walking out a little bit later than the crowd, and we walked down the block to toward our car, and the car pulled up, and guy got out with a gun aimed at us, and I remember my wife, Linda, pushed her watch up her wrist, and I said, Linda, let him have it. I don't care. I'd rather walk away from this with my life. That was what I was thinking. It's enraging.
Did they take anything from you?
They took her watch. They took my wedding ring. And they took wallet. They took everything. And I got the ID and stuff back. And I never knew what happened in that. If they ever caught those guys or not. Probably the way things go, they got their, their law of some kind of karmic law got them, probably, I suppose.
Let's hope so. Good grief.
Yeah,
I'm
playing with you, yeah.
it is. So we're going to take a little break, just a short one, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about Cactus Flower on Broadway.
Okay.
And we'll get involved in Broadway. So we'll be back in just a moment on Columbo Chronicles Live. We're speaking to Rick Lentz, and he is an actor-turned-author. And we're also going to talk about his latest book, which is The Alexandrite. And so don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Loosen up because you're listening to The Rose on Columbo Chronicles Live at Blog Talk Radio Worldwide Online Podcast, where you can be heard all around the world. And all shows are archived, so if you miss a show, you can scroll on down and you can check out your favorite topic and your favorite guest and listen at any time at your convenience. And today we have a very special guest that we are speaking with in the world of authors and experts, and that is Rick Lentz, and he is an actor turned author. We're also going to talk about his book, The Alexandrite, and find out what that's all about. So let's get back and talk to our very special guest, Rick Lentz, and ask him. Rick, you did Cactus Flower on Broadway and the movie version. So how did you get cast in the Broadway version and the movie version, and which one did you have the most fun doing?
I truly had a great time doing both, because first of all, the Broadway show was my kind of big break. Actually, so was the movie, to tell you the truth. So when I got the Broadway show, I was just so excited, and I did have to read, despite David Merrick having seen me. And I remember I had to understudy two roles, the role that I did, Igor Sullivan, and the other role, the role that was done in the movie by Jack Weston. I don't know if you remember him, character actor, really good character actor, kind of sort of stocky guy, and very, very funny, and he could be both menacing and funny. But anyway, so I had to understudy his role, too, on Broadway. And the reason I got the job, or partly, anyway, of the part that I eventually did in the movie, was because I could understudy the other character as well, and I knew an actor who'd done another role that was very like that role. If this is at all possible to follow, anyway, so this other role that I had to understudy and audition for too, I knew what he had to be. He had to be very broad. So I think I was probably the only actor who auditioned for Igor, who did the other audition, you know, very broadly. Like, this is really boring. I'm sorry. and then when I got the movie, I'd gone out to do a California to do a pilot, and then I did a few episodes of Green Acres, and they liked me on that, and the producer said I'm going to have this series, the spinoff, where Arnold the Pig, I don't know if you remember that there was a character, where Arnold the Pig on Green Acres, and they were going to do a series. He took me out to dinner, and he outlined what this was going to be. I was going to be the lawyer for this very wealthy pig who inherits all everybody's money from Green Acres, and he tours the world, and I am Arnold the Pig's spokesman, and doesn't this sound like My Mother the Car or one of those classic failures? Anyway, I told my agent, if this comes to fruition, I'm going to pass, please, because I really don't want to have my career just end suddenly because I'm the international spokesman for a pig. So,
that is a funny story.
Yeah. So anyway, I got out of that, and I got another.
It would have been okay if the pig could pay you, quite a sum from the inheritance, right?
right, exactly, or something to make up for the fact that my I was not going to come out of playing a role as a lawyer for a pig known as a first-rate actor. That just doesn't happen.
You were probably thinking, oh my gosh, that's what people are going to remember, right?
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's just, you go through all that, trouble to get to be, all that acting school and stuff, and then you just toss it away by making some money for a while as the lawyer for a pig, but then you're all done. Then they just throw Hollywood, anyway, just throws you away. Sometimes you can go back to New York and go ahead.
What was it like working with the Gabor sisters? They were very beautiful, too. And I know when they came to Hollywood, they were poor, and they got help.
Yeah.
They have a good story, too, about how they ended up in the movies. And so, what was it like working with them?
Well, that was crazy because they had never worked before together, and I kind of felt that underneath everything, they pretty much weren't crazy about each other. There was a production of Arsenic and Old Lace that was done in Chicago, and I was cast in the Cary Grant role, and Ava and Zsa were to play the sisters, but they brought them down one generation because they were older in the movie, and the Gabors didn't want to think of themselves as being that age, so they brought themselves down to not being my great aunt, I believe, but to just being my aunt, and my two aunts, rather, and so they were, killing all these people, but the rehearsal process was just, first of all, we all sat around and wonderful, John Carradine, and wonderful supporting cast of actors, and we waited for the first 4 days of rehearsal while the director and I guess the producer and the two sisters, Ava and Zsa, split up the lines. I mean, they had to split them up equally so that one didn't have more to say than the other because the other would have been jealous of that. I know, it's tiresome, isn't it?
Oh my goodness!
And all the posters had this. One would have Zsa first, and then Ava, and the next one would be the other way around. So you can imagine the printing costs. But we sold out every night, and Ava was a pretty good actress. Zsa not so much, but otherwise it was a good production. It was fun. I remember one time. We saw the fire department come, the rescue guys, and I think it was Ava, and I know it was Ava, had fainted, and she was on stage, and I heard with my own ears, I heard the guy who had given her treatment, CPR he gave
CPR?
Her. I don't imagine it. That's not right. I don't think. Anyway, he was ministering to her, and I listened to him call in on the radio, and he said, "White, Caucasian, middle-aged." Well, right. She sat up right there because you just don't call a Gabor middle-aged ever, even when they were old. You wouldn't call because they just didn't like to admit that they were anything ever than extremely young and gorgeous, and they were still, very attractive women when I worked with them, but gosh, it was a crazy amount of sibling rivalry, I guess is what it's called.
Isn't that
they
funny?
They did not like each other. Yeah.
That is so funny. And so you worked your way all the way up to Broadway and Broadway success, and then also you worked yourself up all the way to a silver screen with big names, and you played many, many different roles too. What are some of the roles, characters that you actually played, and what was your favorite?
Well, there's a lot of them that I loved doing a couple of them after the fact. Well, one was I did a movie with Peter Sellers called Where Does It Hurt? And working with him was also kind of a, you know, sort of a mind blower, because he had the craft and talent and ability to do. I remember doing one scene with him. And this was it was kind of a longish scene, and I was a construction worker who just checked in because he heard somewhere you should get a chest X-ray sometimes. So this was kind of a not very honest operation, this hospital that this was taking place in, and he was the guy who ran it. And anyway, so he said, "Oh, you don't look good to me," and so he then checked me into the hospital for a series of tests, and of course it was all about making money for the hospital and for him especially, but it was fun, because to play comedy with Peter Sellers is a privilege, because he was one of the best I ever came across. I also did a movie with Jackie Gleason and Maureen O'Hara and Shelley Winters, and called How Do I Love Thee, and it was and Rosemary Forsyth played my wife in it, and that was a fascinating experience. We did it in Miami, and it was I don't know why this jumps to my mind, and I got to tell you that I'm not going to spank myself, because most of those people are gone except Rosemary, who's very much with us. But I remember one day Jackie was kind of seemed to be under the weather, and I remember Shelley Winters saying to him, "Jackie, are you even trying?" And well, you don't say that to Jackie Gleason. If it had been his show, he'd have had her fired on the spot. And when Jackie was great, he was non-pariah, but the rest of the time, you know, sometimes he could be a little. And Shelley just said what she thought always, and I just never forget her saying, "Jackie, are you even trying?" so, and true enough, Jackie was better in the next take.
That's a good story. So tell us about, you went from actor to author, and you wrote this wonderful novel, Alexandrite. And what is Alexandrite about?
Well, it's about, thank you. It's about, I began it as a play. I used to be a playwright, and I got some stuff done here and there, and in New York and Los Angeles and some in Chicago mostly, and then I had I liked this idea. It was somebody kind of goes back in time, basically, and I worked for three women who ran a theater in Los Angeles, and I wrote this for them and for me, of course, but then I realized that it just really was begging to be a novel. And it was even before I wrote North of Hollywood, I just thought, well, I'll just see if I can make a novel out of this. And along the way, I got just enormous help from people who were novelists, not playwrights. And, among them were Elizabeth Forsyth Haley, who wrote A Woman of Independent Means, and Bret Easton Ellis also gave me a just out of the kindness of his heart, I guess. I didn't even know him. His mother knew my wife, and so he did a 350 page, just note page by line by line note, and I just, it was a writing lesson. I'm not getting to the point. The point was that I finally made this into a book. And to a novel, and I realized, since I got him back in time, my guy, into the mid-50s, and that if he was back in time as this other character, which was a gemologist, and I won't try to just, you know, to give you all the plot, but he's also still an actor in his soul, So he goes over to Schwab's drugstore, the famous, you know, the pharmacy where Rita Hayworth or Lana Turner, I guess, was discovered. And he hears from someone there that they're casting Bus Stop, which is a role Marilyn Monroe did. And so I thought, oh, yeah, that's what's got to happen. And so Marilyn Monroe became a character in the book. And I had to do a lot of research, which was actually a lot of fun, because there was a complex character, Marilyn was. And so I read at least a dozen books on her, and I'd known Susan Strasberg, who had been kind of, who wrote a book about Marilyn called, I think, Rivals, Sisters, Friends, because Marilyn had lived with Susan Strasberg's family for a while. Susan's father was Lee Strasberg, the acting teacher. And then I got to know more about Marilyn and Joshua Logan, who was in, so they become characters, Joshua Logan, the director of Bus Stop, and Marilyn in the book, and that turns it down a whole fascinating new lane that kind of interspersed with the rest of the, it's very much a mystery, it's kind of even almost a murder mystery in a way, but the character of Marilyn is just, you know, it was so much fun to bring to life in the way that, you know that she was underneath her, all the makeup and the, you know, and all the kind of, you know, putting on the, all that stuff that Hollywood made her do. It wasn't really
exactly.
Her.
It sounds really exciting, and unfortunately we came to the end of our interview, but how do we find your book? Where do we find it, and how can people purchase your book, The Alexandrite?
That book is available on Amazon that I know of for sure. We're doing arranging because I've got another book coming out in which John Wayne is a character called Impersonators Anonymous this fall. But that one is available on Amazon now, and it's done very nicely. It's got, you know, a bunch of, you know, nice stuff said about it and so on. And that's the way to get it on Amazon right now. It's gotten
fantastic. And so Rick Lenz, it's L-E-N-Z, so look him up on the internet, Rick Lenz, L-E-N-Z, and on Amazon.com. Look for his book, The Alexandrite, and maybe you'll come back and talk to us in the future about North of Hollywood, and because I would like to know why you talk a lot about your daughter in that particular book as well. So,
I'd love to.
Oh, fantastic. And it's been a real pleasure and very intriguing and interesting.
Oh, me too, Rose. I'm sorry about that difficulty at the
beginning.
Don't
even be sorry. You know what I always say? It's all supposed to happen when it's supposed to happen.
Well, I should listen to you more.
Thank you so much.
Rose.
God bless.
Thank
you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
And Rick Lenz left the building, and that's all we have time for today, folks. So tune in again from noon to 1:30 p.m. for Rose Colombo's Colombo Chronicles live at Blog Talk Radio, worldwide online podcast just for you.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.